friends with this couple, Tom and Amy. Really nice people. Recently, they lent me a book. It's called Big Box Swindle: The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses. And I started reading it, and it was really interesting. The author made some really interesting points, and it got me to thinking, you know, I should get her on the phone and interview her. And then it got me to thinking, you know, I should do a whole show on this notion of big box stores coming in and what it means to independent businesses. So that's what I've done. I'm Peter Finch. This is The Beat of the Bay. We're going to spend the next half hour looking at this topic. And we start off with some comments. David Brooks, a columnist with the New York Times, made recently to the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco.
I always say, if you really want to get a sense of the country, go to a Home Depot and watch an American man buy a barbecue grill, because that's when he's most emotionally exposed. He's going into the grill and to the store, and he's doing the manly waddle men do in the presence of large amounts of lumber. And he's going up to the big grills, the Weber Genesis grill, because in America it makes sense to name a barbecue grill after a book in the Bible. And he chooses the 942-inch grill surface in case he gets the urge to roast a bison. He buys his grill, takes it out to his truck out in the big box mall, and he's in one of these parking lots with giant parking lots with a PetSmart over here and a Petco over there, sort of just across the parking lot, just over the curvature of the earth. You can see this gigantic Old Navy, and then maybe along the highway there are all the suburban theme restaurants, which if they merge would be called Chili's, Olive Garden, Hard Rock, Outback Cantina. And then the Walmart over here, and then over here, my favorite, which is the Costco, which is like Walmart on acid. And it's over here. You can get your bags with 60 pounds of tater tots, your packages with maybe 120 pounds of detergents, or little packages with 6,000 Q-tips inside, which is 12,000 swabs, because there's one at either end. And I always go to these places thinking, you know, who comes here shopping for condoms? Because the quantities are so gigantic. And then you realize there are a lot of optimistic people in America. And finally, they're all having the same conversation, which is about how much money they're saving by buying in bulk. And so you think, you know, they're saying like, you know, we should get 10,000 popsicles because we were thinking of having kids anyway.
So that was David Brooks of the New York Times laying out a visual image of somebody shopping at a big box store. And joining me now is the author of the book, Big Box Swindle: The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses, Stacy Mitchell. Good morning and welcome to our show.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to talking to you. Your book came out in 2006, so it's been a couple of years now. And toward the end here, I'll ask you how maybe things have changed a bit since the book first came out and get you to comment on the reaction to the book. But first off, I just want to kind of talk to you about some of the points you cover in the book, okay?
Sounds great.
One thing you talk about, you kind of go down and lay out all the arguments that are made for having big box stores, and for our purposes here, we might kind of use Walmart interchangeably with big box since it is kind of the mothership. But when these stores come in, oftentimes it's sold to the community as being big in terms of job creation, and that it will give people a place to buy goods that are not overpriced and things like that. And I just kind of want to go down point by point here with you on some of these things. So first off, let's start with the argument that these stores coming in are great for the local economy because they bring in hundreds of jobs. What is your response to that?
Well, what all the research really points to is that these stores take far more out of our local economies than they put back in. you know, often, as you said, they're, you know, sort of the big promise is that they're going to bring all these jobs, you know, hundreds of jobs in one of these stores. But what often is overlooked is the fact that these stores end up destroying as many and usually more jobs than they create. And they do that in a couple of ways. One is that if you think about it, just because you know, Walmart or Target opens in your community, it doesn't mean that people in your area have more money to spend. So there's no growth in retail sales when one of these stores opens. Invariably, whatever sales go into that store are mirrored by an equivalent loss of sales at existing businesses. And what economists have found is that as those existing businesses downsize, some of them close, they lay people off. And if you add up all of those job losses, it actually exceeds the number of jobs created by the big box store. And this was shown very conclusively in a study done by some researchers at the University of California a few years ago who looked at over 2,000 Walmart store openings across the country and found on average for every job that Walmart creates, a retail job, it eliminates 1.4 existing retail jobs.
Well, and one point you make in your book is that a lot of these jobs that go away locally are replaced by jobs, you know, at the big box stores that don't pay as well and often don't offer benefits.
Yeah, I mean, one of the really the sort of big picture argument that I make in the book, and a lot of the focus is on how this whole like Walmart business model, and I, you know, it's not just them; it's Target and Home Depot and these other companies as well. They all follow this same business model. But what this business model is really doing to the American economy is it's eroding the American middle class. You know, if you think about it, we've lost these two key pillars of the American. We've lost tens of thousands of small businesses that, you know, typically, you know, supported a family. And we've also lost millions of often unionized, well-paid manufacturing jobs because, you know, Walmart and Target have said, you know, look, you either have to move to a low-wage country or we're not going to carry your goods anymore to manufacturers. And as all of those, you know, fairly decent jobs have gone away, all of these companies have given us in return are fairly low-wage jobs working in their stores. So it's really sort of no surprise that we've seen the middle class shrinking and we've got growing numbers of people who are working poor.
I'm talking to Stacy Mitchell. Her book is Big Box Swindle. And one thing you hear from defenders of mega retailers is, hey, let the market decide. If people, you know, people will vote with their dollars. But one point you make in your book is that you feel it's not a level playing field, right?
Yeah, I think one of the most scandalous aspects of this whole issue, you know, is people really do think it's a free market. And what I found and what I document in the book is just how much public policy has favored the big guys. You know, every year in this country, local governments, cities, counties give away hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies to get big box retailers to build. So they'll give, you know, Target a $7 million tax break for coming into a community or, you know, $10 million for a Walmart. Almost everywhere, you know, many of the stores that these companies build are, in fact, publicly subsidized. Now, you know, go talk to your neighborhood hardware store, your local grocer. I mean, they're not getting those kinds of subsidies and tax breaks. It's a very unlevel playing field, and that's just one of a number of examples that I document in the book where government policy is really rigged to favor the Walmarts of the world and undermine small businesses.
Well, and what we've talked about so far, just a few of the points you make in your book, Big Box Swindle. As I mentioned at the outset, it first came out in 2006, and I guess one thing I want to know, what was the reaction to the book, you know, and were you satisfied with the reaction that you got to it?
Yeah, it was really very heartening and gratifying, the numbers of people who came, you know, when I was on tour giving talks and stuff, or who wrote me emails, and who just said, you know, I've always felt this way, or oftentimes it was small business owners saying, you know, you really articulated what our role is in the community and the local economy, and you know, we're really glad to have that, you know, brought to light. One of the you know, things have changed in the last 4 or 5 years since the book came out, in ways that I think are really positive. There are now independent business alliances running really very effective by local campaigns in over 140 cities around the country, and we have new research showing that those campaigns are really having an effect, that people are beginning to think about the difference between a chain and an independent business and starting to choose independent more often. And there are even some signs that in certain sectors the number of independent businesses is actually growing now, whereas it was shrinking before.
Well, and also in terms of local governments, I know anecdotally here in the Bay Area, it seems like that some of the local city councils aren't just ready to rubber stamp the big mega retailers coming into their communities now, that they're taking a long, hard look at it. Is that just a Bay Area thing, or is this something we're seeing nationally?
No, we're seeing it all over the country. You know, at this point, there's a much broader awareness among city officials that the promises that these companies make, you know, really don't deliver, and that, you know, now that they've sort of seen what happens in other communities, and now that the economic research is there, there's more and more skepticism on the part of local officials, and more of them are turning to some of the resources we have at the New Rules Project, you know, to look at model policies that they can adopt and so on. One of the things that I would really like to see is for this, you know, in addition to being a local issue, to start to be something that state legislatures take up and more, because I think, you know, one of the real challenges that local governments face is that these companies are always playing one off another. They're saying, well, you know, if you don't let us in to San Francisco, we'll just go to the suburb right next door to you and cause, you know, nearly as much harm and that sort of thing. And I think we really need to start thinking about sort of state-level policies that give cities more power to really look at the economic impacts and to say no where it doesn't make sense.
I kind of want to start wrapping this up, Stacey, by talking a little bit about, well, I guess speaking directly to the average consumer who may be listening to this right now as a listener. You make some points in the book. You know, oftentimes people start flocking to the big box stores when they come into town thinking that they're getting a real good deal. But one point you make in your book is that that isn't always necessarily the case, that the mega retailers aren't that much better of a deal?
Yeah, you know, it's really, you know, it's interesting. People sort of make that assumption in a really broad way, but if you begin to dig around, it's not necessarily the case. One thing to know is that these companies don't charge the same amount at all their stores. So one of the strategies that they use is when they come into a new market, they'll have super low prices and maybe even below their costs on some goods in order to get people to walk in the door and say, hey, gosh, the prices are really low, I'm going to start shopping here. And then over time, as the competition, local competition disappears, those prices sort of gradually rise and people don't necessarily notice it. One of the other things that a lot of companies, you know, Walmart in particular, do is that when they pressure manufacturers for lower prices, the manufacturers have responded by creating these separate product lines. So you go into a Walmart and you're like looking at a blender or a vacuum cleaner or a pair of jeans, and you think, oh, well, it's Levi's jeans. Isn't it the same as Levi's jeans that I might see at an independent store? Isn't this the same appliance I would see at an independent appliance store? It kind of looks like the same thing. But in fact, those manufacturers have, in order to get to the Walmart price point, have cut corners. And so you're ending up buying a product that maybe has plastic parts inside and not metal. It's not going to last as long. And in the end, you're actually going to end up paying more because you'll have to replace it more often. So I think as a consumer, it's really, you know, it's important if you go into these stores to have a very skeptical eye about what it is that they're selling and to actually shop around. Consumer Reports has done a number of studies. One of the most recent ones came out in August or September last year, looked at appliances and said, you know what, the best place to buy an appliance is an independent appliance dealer. You know, not only are you going to get better service and selection, but often you actually even get a lower price than you would get even at Walmart or Costco. So, you know, as I said, it's important to be skeptical about some of those claims.
Well, one of the points of today's show has been to give voice to those who think, you know, independent businesses have a lot of merit and that maybe we should be a little leery of mega retailers coming into our communities. And I think you're a really good spokesperson for that movement. And I guess I would ask for any final thoughts or final words you might have on this topic.
Well, as I said, I'm really very encouraged by what's been happening in the last few years. We've had, for example, 1,400 new specialty grocery stores, independent grocery stores, neighborhood grocery stores open in the last 5 years. We've had 400 new independent bookstores open nationwide. We've now got 6,000 farmers markets in the U.S. that are active. There are a lot of signs that this idea of local economy, that people are sort of realizing what the Walmart swindle is all about, and are, you know, really turning back towards an economy that's really made up of our neighbors, where our dollars stay circulating locally, and where we support good local jobs that keep us all, you know, healthy, happy, and middle class, as opposed to kind of going down this race to the bottom.
We've been talking to Stacy Mitchell. Her book is Big Box Swindle, The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses. Stacy, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
It's been great to be with you.
Have a good day.
Thanks. Take care.
Home starts with sweatshop labor in a foreign factory and gets packed on a vessel and shipped over the sea. Onto trailers and it's spread across the map.
Big Box Mart is the place I go to buy all of my crap.
Go Big Box Mart,
what do you have for me?
Cause our shopping carts are empty and we're on a shopping spree.
I come to the Big Box Mart cause I do have lots of needs, and they sell crap the cheapest with their discounts guaranteed. When I'm walking through the aisles, it's like I'm hypnotized. With a wallet full of credit cards, I never leave deprived.
Oh, Big Box Mart,
thank you for serving me. Cause my house is full of crap now and it used to be empty.
The next day at the factory, the news was very grim.
My job was being outsourced to the slums of East Beijing.
Management was streamlining the company's org chart.
We gotta make crap cheap enough
to sell to Big Box Mart. Oh, Big Box Mart,
look what you've done to me.
He's gotta start all over at the age of 53.
I still go to Big Box Mart, yes, I'm there most all the time. These days you'll likely find me sweeping aisle number 9. My dreams of a retirement have gone up in a blaze, and I'll be scrubbing toilets till they stick me in the grave.
Oh, Big Box Mart,
what have you sold to me?
We used to be your customers, now we're your employees. Oh, Big Box Mart,
my paycheck reminds me your everyday low prices have a price.
They are rent free.
Paper or plastic?
That's Big Box Mart. From those clever folks with Jib Jab, to see the video that goes with it, you can go to Jib Jab online and look up Big Box Mart. I'm Peter Finch. This is the Beat of the Bay. Big box stores, mega retailers, independent businesses are the topic of the show this time around.
I also feel, before we go too much further here today, I feel that I should divulge to you that I have a significant holding in IKEA furniture. A tremendous amount of IKEA furniture, because my wife and I love IKEA. And I do not mean that we love IKEA in a disaffected, ironic, hipster fashion. We love it in a sincere fashion. When my wife and I go to IKEA, we do not feel like the twisted wrecks we actually are. We feel like good Americans. We buy those tiny, tiny cardboard boxes, don't take them home, and unfold them into gigantic pieces of furniture. It warms our hearts the way the meatballs warm our stomachs.
That's from The Last Cargo Cult, one of two shows that Mike Daisy is doing right now at Berkeley Rep, and Mike joins us on the phone right now. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
You were talking there. Is it true you and your wife have a place full of IKEA furniture?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, we do. We have a tremendous amount of IKEA furniture.
Well, the show this time around is about big box stores and kind of the way that they permeate our culture these days, and certainly you can't go too far without seeing an IKEA store. And I just wanted to get your thoughts kind of off the cuff of chain retailers and big box stores and things along those lines.
Well, you know, I mean, it's an interesting conundrum because companies, especially companies like IKEA, do such a good job of, through their crafting and their branding, creating a human scale image for themselves. And this is why, you know, I feel drawn to them. When I shop at IKEA, I feel like a good person. And you know, there's nothing Americans like more than feeling like a good person while they are also saving money, you know. So when both things come together, you know, I think a lot of the efforts of the big retailers are turning, like they understand that human beings want to feel virtuous. So then it becomes an art to turn the impulse to make us feel virtuous toward ends that result in us buying lots and lots of stuff, and so there's a real effort to do that, and I think there's a recognition that small retailers, that the local buying is better for your ecosystem, your economic ecosystem, but I also think that branding is very persuasive. It's persuasive because we fear the unknown, and IKEA may not be ideal, but after you grow to know what IKEA is, then wherever you are, and IKEA is not far away, and then you know exactly what you're going to get. And I think that's seductive.
What do you think of people who say, you know, come on, you know, don't go to Walmart or whatever the big box stores is. You know, buy local, buy from your local tradespeople, support your area.
They're right. They're absolutely right. That's what we should be doing, especially if we're thinking ecologically, in a long-term way about the kind of businesses we want, the mix of businesses we want in our communities. But at the same time, the same way that I eat too much McDonald's food every time I go through a drive-through to pick up a coffee and an Egg McMuffin because I'm so late, if you index the reasons I'm doing it, it's not because McDonald's offers a fabulous culinary experience. I'm doing it because it offers a predictable and repeatable experience. I'm actually doing it because it is boring and it is quick, and I know that they'll hand it to me right now. Whereas if I went to the muffin shop across the street, you know, I don't know that muffin shop because they're not in every country in the world with thousands and thousands of businesses. And so I think it's actually sort of the triumph of the banal. Like, we say we want to be surprised and subverted in our buying choices, but often the box retailers, they win on sort of efficiency, and the kind of efficiency that comes out of knowing what you're going to get, even if it's miserable.
Yeah.
Because I'm always struck by how long it takes at most box retailers. Like, you think it's very difficult to dip into an IKEA, for instance, and buy one thing. I mean, it's nearly impossible to go in and, oh, I'm missing a plate. I need to buy one plate. Like, you've signed away half your day because the whole system is built around holding you inside that store.
I'm Peter Finch for The Beat of the Bay. This time around, we've been looking at big box stores and mega retailers. And for our final segment this morning, we had our awesome intern, Samantha Land, get her stepmom on the phone.
And so Peter was putting together the whole Walmart story, and mm-hmm. he said that the only angle he didn't have was from someone who actually shops at Walmart, because because we are in San Francisco, where they won't even allow us to have
a Walmart,
or even a Target. We don't have any of the big stores.
Oh, I love Target and Walmart.
So you're perfect, and that's what I told him. I was like, well, my stepmom lives in Porterville, and I kind of feel like, do you feel like you shop there a lot because it's like you don't have a lot of other options now?
Well, we don't have a lot of options because when Walmart came in, their prices were so low that the downtown merchants you know, ended up closing their stores. So we have a lot of boutiques now downtown, but, you know, stuff that Walmart doesn't sell, designer jeans and stuff like that. But, the you know, like the household products and inexpensive clothes that Walmart sells, underwears, socks, bras, and, you know, car stuff for the cars and cleaning supply, everything. You can't beat the prices at Walmart.
I know, it's weird because I try to think of, like, I don't really remember when the Walmart wasn't there. So I'm trying to think, like, I bet that there were little stores on Main Street that sold, you know, supplies like that, but now you don't see anything like that.
Right. Well, we had a whole bunch of stores like Town and Country Drug. We had the drug stores that sold products, cleaning supply. We had a store named, it was called Wasco, you know, just different stores that have closed down because they weren't making it once Walmart came in.
I remember when we were younger and I liked that store. Was it Music Trend or what was that CD store?
Oh,
remember? Remember that store?
The only music store we had?
Yeah.
We only had one.
And I liked that store, and now it's not there. And I don't know if that's specifically because of Walmart, but I was trying to think of what stores can I actually remember that could have possibly been affected by, like, a big store like that.
Right. Well, like I said, a lot of the stores downtown, our downtown actually was a downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a couple of boutiques, maybe a seamstress, and that's maybe a bar or two, and that's it.
Well, and Dad was telling me that there is, like, some controversy because they're trying to open up the super Walmart in somewhere over in Porterville.
Yes, they have built all the area. They did all the plans and.
And so that shopping center, those are mostly like chain stores too. That's not like local.
Yeah, they're mainly restaurants out there right now. And Lowe's and Home Depot. Out there right now.
Yeah, it's weird because I think there probably is a Home Depot somewhere, but I've never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like where we live in the Sunset, it's close to Irving, and there's a few little hardware stores that we go to, but they're in business, and I feel like those are the type of places that totally would, like those family businesses that would shut
down.
Those
definitely went out. We had a Jones Hardware down Main Street, and when I was a young youngster, my father used to go shopping there for all his nails and for all the stuff to fix our house, and windows, air conditionings, they sold everything there. And I remember it was right next to a Thrifty's. I don't know if you remember a Thrifty's. Do you remember a Thrifty's?
I remember Thrifty's, the ice cream.
That's where we used to go get ice cream for a nickel. And one scoop for a nickel. It all got washed out when Walmart came in.
I feel like in Porterville, it's kind of close-knit. You know a lot of the people. But do you know people that had stores that went out of business?
Yes, I did have friends that had a bookstore. My husband had a store downtown. Yeah, there was a couple of friends that had little shops downtown that actually went out of business. I'm not sure if Walmart did it, but they actually, you know, it got so slow they had to close them up. So, because Walmart does sell books and music, so we don't have that anymore. We don't have a bookstore anymore in Porterville.
There's not one bookstore?
No.
It's just Walmart.
We have Walmart.
And it's like, yeah, maybe Walmart didn't necessarily do that, but now they call it the Walmart effect, and it's just these big chain stores.
Yes, Walmart, I know for a fact Walmart did do it. We all love Walmart because of their prices, but it just wiped, you know, our town. It's Walmart's huge. Actually, they want to close the smaller one, Walmart, down, bring a Supercenter. Can you imagine when we get the Supercenter? Because they're going to sell more food.
Yeah,
so that's scary for our grocery stores that we have in town. Like I said, I love Walmart and I hate Walmart. I love Walmart because their prices are great. They have great products. I hate Walmart because it's always full of people. And it's just a zoo all the time, you know. It's all day long, every day, 24/7. There's people there all the time. And so it's a hassle going to Walmart because I only go there when I absolutely need to go. And when I go, I shop for like a month. I like to load up so I don't have to go so often.
Yeah. Again, that was our intern, Samantha Land, talking with her stepmom about shopping at Walmart. That's our show on big box stores and mega retailers. I hope you found it interesting. I'm Peter Finch. This has been the Beat of the Bay. Have a nice day.